You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jalen and Jacoby is presented by Samuel Adams.
He is Jalen Rose. I'm David Jacoby. We are Jalen and Jacoby. Go. Mr. Rose, what is it that we do?
We give the people what they want.
We have game four of the NBA Finals tonight. We have another Mahomes performance, but we start where the football ended last night. And that is with Aaron Rodgers throwing not one, not two, not three, but four touchdowns and 327 yards in the air. What did you think about Aaron Rodgers last night?
Well, I was watching this game on the edge of my seat, enjoying some homemade popcorn. I was sipping on some cold sake because I was playing against Aaron Rodgers in fantasy while I have Aaron Jones. And I realized something. People better put some respect on Matt LaFleur's name. Remember when they drafted a quarterback in the first round and everybody thought it was to the demise of the franchise? Now if something happens to Aaron Rodgers, guess what they have? A backup. Because Matt LaFleur has developed multiple backs that they can throw into out of the backfield, they can run into multiple receivers. He's throwing the ball all over the lot. He's throwing it to tight ends. It was fantastic to watch Aaron Rodgers really pick them apart.
I think it is smart to not just give Rodgers credit, but also LaFleur credit for their offensive performance. They're sitting at 4-0, and I was watching this game last night, not with fantasy implications, not with some fresh-made popcorn, and I said to myself, you know what? This is very clear to me right now. It all became very clear to me. There are only two teams in the NFC that are true contenders. Here's how I see the NFC after watching that game last night. It is the Packers, it is the Seahawks, and then there's a large gap with these other teams that might be dangerous in the playoffs, but I see two clear true contenders in the NFC and then some teams that could make a leap, and that's the Buccaneers, the Rams, and the Saints. Do you disagree with how I see the NFC?
I think that's fair, and you know I'm a huge fan of Straightjacket Jacoby. I want to see what happens with Seattle as their season progresses because Russell Wilson has been outstanding. If Carson can stay healthy, like to me, if I had to pick one, I would pick Seattle. And him and Pete Carroll, just what they've been able to accomplish together. I understand why you got to give the Rams their credit because they're 3-1. I still just don't see them as a Super Bowl contending team. But I understand why you would separate those two teams in particular who just so happen to be undefeated. And also, you can't underestimate Tom Brady. I know they're sitting there at 3-1. I think their defense is going to continue to get better. They're going to get healthy. They're going to get Fournette back hopefully at some point. The Bucs going to be in the conversation also.
Everyone watching this is lying to themselves. If they didn't see the first couple drives of the Bucs last week, you'd be like, Tom Brady might be done. Tom Brady might be done. And then he threw for five touchdowns. Jalen, that wasn't the only football action last night due to the positive coronavirus test of Cam Newton. The Patriots-Chiefs game was delayed until Monday night, and it was an interesting contest. Of course, the Chiefs ended up winning. Mahomes played pretty well. What did you think about the Chiefs last night?
Where my homies, their defense. We're going to talk a lot about their offense, and rightfully so. But the first handful of weeks of the season, they've been outstanding. And you know I'm a huge fan of the Honey Badger, and I appreciate what he's been able to overcome to resurrect his career, become a champion. The Patriots had a couple of drops. Edelman had a drop as well that led to Honey Badger's touchdown. And the quarterback play was just bad for the Patriots. Yeah. Just bad. Brian Hoyer, like, you do know that y'all in field goal range. Like, you can't take
Where are you
stack.
Running, dog?
And then you bring in Stidham. There were people that actually said that Stidham was going to replace Tom Brady. Where those people at? The same guy that got in and threw two interceptions so fast? Oh, man, if Cam Newton would have been playing, we would have got that headline matchup we was really looking for.
I'm glad you brought that up, because while the Chiefs got the win, I watched every snap of this game, and I started asking myself something I don't normally ask myself. Is this Chiefs team vulnerable? Obviously, Bill Belichick is one of the greatest defensive minds to ever think about the game of football, but they had 6 points at the half. You look at the final score. Oh, look, they had 26. But don't forget, we had that pick six. So they scored basically 19 points. And this Chiefs offense was kind of stifled by the Patriots defense. And don't forget that overtime game they had against the Chargers. The Chiefs do not look like this runaway Super Bowl favorite that we all kind of expected them to be. And we all thought they would be after that Monday night win against the Ravens. Do you agree with me that this Chiefs team looks a little vulnerable?
It usually doesn't happen the way people anticipate that it will, because every time somebody wins a championship, we just look at it like they steamrolled the opponents and they got the big shiny rings. We underestimate the fact that the Texans were beating them 24-0 and just fired their coach. That's how fast things change in the NFL. And when you're the Super Bowl, reigning Super Bowl champions, and it's a physical sport, you're getting everybody's best game each week. So it ain't like they're going to go out there and blow everybody out every week, even though they're so supremely talented.
That's a good point. And there was no true example of what you're talking about. It's sort of how we remember it as champions just steamrolling everybody. But in fact, they've been challenged all the way through. Then when I watched The Last Dance and that Michael Jordan run, we all talk about six championships, six finals MVPs, six finals appearances. But they were pushed a lot to get there. And you know that firsthand because you're on that Pacers team that should have won. But I use that to transition to this year's NBA Finals, where we thought it would be the Lakers just steamrolling through the Heat, especially after the injuries to Goran and Bam. But now we are on the day of game four, coming off a big Heat victory powered by Jimmy Butler. Bam Adebayo is listed as questionable. He'll do everything he can to get on the court. What do you expect to see tonight? And what did you see in game three from the Heat?
I'm an animal lover, in particular dogs. Just bought my daughter Gracie a German Shepherd. His name is King Louie. And you know, one of the things you do with animals when you put them outside without a fence, you make an electronic fence, right? Mm-hmm. So they can stay in your yard. That's what I saw around the paint for Anthony Davis, because he didn't go inside the paint. He did not go inside the paint.
Three shots from the paint.
He had a couple of touches where he caught the ball in the paint. Yeah, and you know what's more disappointing about that? No Bam Adebayo, who's a physical specimen. I want to give Kelly Olynyk a lot of credit. We keep talking about the great play of Jimmy Butler, and rightfully so, a historic performance. But he came in as a starter, and he put in work. And he made Anthony Davis play defense at that three-point line. So that's what I saw, struggling Anthony Davis, that they can't afford to have him come out and play his lackluster tonight.
And one of the things I want to point out, the main difference between Game 2 and Game 3, everyone talks about Jimmy Butler performance, and that's true. It was a great performance. And everybody else says, well, Anthony Davis, he played well, he disappeared. And that's also true. He was in foul trouble. But I think one of the key things that the Heat did, and Spoelstra is so good adjusting game to game in these series, is they played basically 50% zone in Game 2. They played barely any zone in Game 3. They just tried to double Davis, get the ball out of his hands. They would help and get back to their assignments. They were letting Markieff Morris shoot whatever he wanted, and he was hitting, to be honest with you. Danny Green couldn't hit anything. Now, coming into tonight, you know how this is always sort of a chess match. You know, it's a chess match. Do you expect them to go back to the zone as a reaction to that? Do you think them to stick with the man-to-man tonight to try to stifle the Lakers?
I think they're going to ultimately play a lot of zone, because you got to try to suffocate the paint and keep the Lakers outside of it. And that's one of the ways you're able to do it, by stacking the zone the way they did. And again, you got to give them a lot of credit. The Miami Heat did exactly what I anticipated, to be honest with you. Their DNA is all about toughness, sacrifice, and finding a way to get it done. You saw Eric Spoelstra at the press conference when he was asked about what people think. You saw Jimmy Butler distinctly guarantee a win. Now, just think about this for a second. Jimmy Butler is playing basketball against LeBron James in the NBA Finals. Guarantees a win to the media. Goes out and scores 40 and has a triple-double against LeBron James. He bullied LeBron, dog. Don't talk to me about the role players in Game 3. AD LeBron will tell you, I'm pretty sure they were in film session like, what, wait a minute. Jimmy had more points, rebounds, and assists than I did? That has never happened to me in a basketball game ever. I'm LeBron James. And also caused six turnovers when he was guarding LeBron. Not one, two, three, four, five, six. He guaranteed a win and got LeBron James to turn the ball over six times and score 40.
Jalen,
okay,
it wasn't.
So I believe the Lakers win this game, however. But I think Jimmy Butler and them is going to find a way to win a secondary game. Overall, this will ultimately be Lakers in six. But make sure you acknowledge what Jimmy Butler did in that previous game. That's all-time outstanding.
We will acknowledge what Jimmy Butler did in that previous game because it will be the last time that we will acknowledge a good Heat performance, because you know that AD, especially AD, is going to come back and perform tonight. And I think that the Lakers get the win tonight. And then game five, here's what I see. I see all the Lakers looking at their plane tickets. Might as well just put the plane tickets up on the whiteboard. Just be like, do you want to stay in the bubble? Do you want to eat at the same restaurant again? Do you want to live in that hotel room? Or do you want to go home? That's why I have the Lakers winning in five. Because the motivation to bounce back from the game three performance, especially from Anthony Davis, and just the motivation to get out of the bubble. Like, I don't think people really understand just how bad these players want to leave. The Lakers are the more talented team. They're the healthier team. And they will get this done in five. Now, I do want to get back to one X's and O's thing, because you kind of said that Jimmy Butler bullied LeBron, and it kind of looked like it, especially in the fourth quarter. And then LeBron did the thing he did with Jamal Murray. He's like, oh, this guy's hot, then let me check him. However, in the pick and roll defense, he was allowing that switch to happen, and then you'd watch Jimmy Butler score on Morris or score on KCP. Do you think that he will fight through those picks? Do you think they will change their defensive strategy in game four?
I don't think they'll necessarily change their defensive strategy. They're just going to play with more force, with more effort. Jimmy Butler had 40 points in the finals game and didn't attempt a three-point shot. The last dude to do that was Shaq in the early 2000s, and he's 7 foot, 300 pounds. That's what I mean when you watch the Miami Heat play. They're not a monolith like most of the teams where you have five guys standing around the three-point line. They do dribble handoffs. They do away actions for pick and rolls. And their best players offensively aren't volume three-point shooters. So the Lakers got to use their height and suffocate the paint better.
You know what? I'm petty, and I know LeBron is too. I know he thought this, and he would never, ever admit it. There's a part of him that was like, oh, AD done lost the finals MVP. AD just handed me the finals MVP with that game three. I really believe that. He would never admit it or say it into a microphone, but somewhere in the back of his head, he was like, oh, AD just put that thing on a platter for me and watch me take this home. Jalen, sometimes there's video in the world of sports that we need to break down with the minute details, so you and I go to the table. Julius Randle's son is learning the game of basketball. And look at this young man on the court. They've got the uniforms. They've got the refs. The action's going down. That's him, number 30, right there. So he's just trying to help his teammates, getting double teamed. Trying to help his teammate. It's just like, takes him down. Jalen, what do you think about Julius Randle's son's approach to offensive basketball?
I love that so much. First off, he got great hair. Second, he's rocking his dad's number to the fullest. Great to see his dad there to support him and watch him play. Maybe we have the first guy that can play in the NFL and the NBA at the same time. How about
that? Maybe we will see that. He's certainly headed that direction with his approach to offense. Jalen, Bill O'Brien is no longer the GM of the Houston Texans. Oh, wait, he's also no longer the coach of the Houston Texans. We'll break that down and much more. Stay tuned. You're watching Jalen and Jacoby.
Jalen and Jacoby is presented by Samuel Adams from Boston with love. Savor the flavor responsibly. Part of Happy Hour.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's a new day on ESPN Radio with new voices that have big things to say. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin.
That's how you build a winning culture.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz.
You are like the Einstein of life.
Reading.
How ridiculously good was that?
The Max Kellerman Show.
Why not get out in front of it?
And Janaean Golick Jr.
I knew we were destined for greatness.
All day, every day.
Big names, new voices.
It is time to go to work.
Real talk. Weekdays on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and smart speakers everywhere.
Good Coming to you live from Pier 17 in the South Street Seaport District of Manhattan and brought to you by Chase. Welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen, it's time for you to decide what we discuss. It's time for Keep It Moving.
Wu-Tang! Wu-Tang!
If you would like to discuss the topic, just say hit the brakes. If not, me, you, and Method Man will keep it moving. And we start with Bill O'Brien no longer with the
hit
Houston
the
Texans. Bill O'Brien is no longer the GM or the head coach of the Houston Texans after an 0-4 start. What do you think of this?
I think we just talked about this topic after the first week, after the second week, after the third week, after we had D-Hop on the show. As a matter of fact, we've been talking about this since Clowney left. We've been talking about this since Bill O'Brien in particular has been the GM. The only thing he did as the GM was get Deshaun Watson drafted and signed. I told you, once he signed that contract, he was going to be fired. We look up 2 weeks after I said it, he is fired. What ended up happening is D-Hop and Deshaun had to break up because of him to both get their bread. He was standing in the way. They supposed to fire him in the offseason and kept them together.
I look forward to them hiring Eric Bieniemy this offseason, but I do want to say this about this firing. Your boy Matt Patricia and Adam Gase are like, oh, we're doing that now? Only after 4 weeks? We're doing that?
Oh, we got a problem here? Like Ice Cube. Exactly. Like, we got a problem here?
Moving on. A team that has hired a new coach announced him and had a little press conference. Of course, I'm talking about the 76ers and Doc Rivers. Keep it moving or hit the brakes.
Hit the brakes.
Glenn Doc Rivers said about Embiid and Simmons as a pairing, it clearly works when they play together. Jalen, do you think they will keep Embiid and Simmons through this offseason and draft?
What he said is an absolute fact. It clearly works when they play together. The problem is Joel Embiid misses practice in game time, and Ben Simmons isn't taking shots outside of the paint. The compatibility has been more of an issue. Not can they make the playoffs, it's can they win the East. I think what Doc is going to earn his big dollars is getting the most and better out of Tobias Harris. And so when you give him that deal, you need him to really be productive when all of these guys are watching Jimmy Butler lead the Miami Heat the first year with the squad to the finals after he just left Philly because they chose not to re-sign him. So Doc Rivers is going to be a guy to try to reposition these players. The East is wide open. The Nets will be there. The Bucks are great in the regular season. Can they turn it on in the playoffs? The Heat are going to continue to ascend. So if these guys are healthy in a seven-game series, they're going to be a tough out. And Toronto's going to do something in this offseason. Wink, wink, if they add Montrezl Harrell.
Remember what you heard? The Montrezl Harrell news first. Moving on, Jalen. Got some bad news for fantasy owners of Nick Chubb. Keep it moving or hit the brakes.
Get well soon, big fella. Keep it moving.
We keep it moving. We keep it moving.
The Bronx Bombers lived up to their name. Keep it moving or hit the brakes.
Hit the brakes. Hit the brakes. What my bad.
Bronx Bombers, the Yankees, came back from two deficits in this one to beat the Rays 9-3 and take a lead in the series after winning game one. What do you think of this?
So to me, it's not always winning or losing. Is if you're playing to the identity of how you built your team. Mm-hmm. And when you sign big-time dollars for starting pitching, you need them to go out there and be aces. They're getting that. When you have home run hitters the way they do, that's how you're going to win games. They ain't going to small ball nobody. You ain't going to see the Yankees trying to bunt and steal bases to manufacture runs. They're trying to hit home runs. Okay, yes. So they're playing to their identity. That's why they look like they have a legitimate chance to possibly win it this year.
They're not trying to sprint between bases. They're trying to jog around the bases. And it's worked to this point, and they've now got a 1-0 lead on the Tampa Bay Rays. Moving on, the Hawks release some very significant jersey designs for next season. Keep moving or hit the brakes.
Hit the brakes.
Let's take a look at the new alternate Hawks jersey for next season. Jalen, what does this tell you about where they're going?
It tells me I need one of those, that flat out. And I got Grant Hill, one of the owners, my brother, just like I hit him up for tickets. They do a terrific job of showing me and the fam love years and years and years going to Hawks games. I need one of those with the number 5 on it. That is beautiful. And I'm also going to say this. You're probably going to see that uniform either around MLK Day. That's when the NBA hopes to start the season. but likely Black History Month, because they want to try to have fans in the stands. But either way, that's when you'll get your NBA for the next season, 2021.
Jalen, you use this platform to break down sports, not just basketball, like no one else I've ever seen. You do such a great job of that. You use this platform to help the fight against social injustice, and you're great at that, too. You also use this platform to ask for stuff all the time. I like you do sometimes. Sometimes you're just like, yo, can I get some jerseys? Can I get some jerseys? Like, yo, do that on your own time, Jay. Do that on your own time. Finally, we have
represent for my piece.
The WNBA Finals, Game 3 tonight at 7 p.m. Keep moving. Hit the brakes.
Hit the brakes.
This could be the night where the Seattle Storm win the WNBA Finals from the Wubble. Will they do it with Breonna Stewart and Sue Bird?
I have to reveal something, Jacoby. I'm going to make it real quick because this is You know the kind of professional crush that I have on the Joker?
Mm-hmm.
I have one on Breonna Stewart, too. She got game. They're going to win.
Don't forget the dedication that we have as a show to Sabrina Ionescu. I will never leave you, Sabrina. I will never die easy on you like Jalen Rose just did. We'll be back with much more. You're watching Jalen and Jacoby.
Jalen and Jacoby is presented by Samuel Adams from Boston with love. Savor the flavor responsibly. Part of Happy Hour.
...9 p.m. Eastern tonight. It is Game 4 of the NBA Finals. Can the Heat even the series against the Lakers? Find out at 9 on ABC. And don't forget to watch NBA Countdown at 8:30 also on ABC. Welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen, it is Tuesday, so it is time for our Tuesday Takeaways. We've taken in all the information from Week 4 and broke it down into one simple thought apiece. What is your Tuesday Takeaway?
The Cowboys ain't going to the Super Bowl. Luckily, they're going to make the playoffs because they're in the NFC East. But in order to change their fortunes and remake their roster after they paid a couple of people on defense and they paid Amari Cooper, once they pay Dak, it's going to be at the expense of Ezekiel Elliott. Ultimately, he's going to end up elsewhere, and the team is going to be happy to have him.
My Tuesday takeaway is very simple. If you're in Miami, it is Tua time. I don't care what you say, Brian Flores. Fitzpatrick has 6 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Put Tua in the game. It is time. It is also time for highly questionable Dan Le Batard. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. Make sure you listen to our podcast and subscribe. We always have exclusive podcast content for our podcast listeners that we love so much, and today is a very special day for those that listen to the podcast, because we have joining us today, just for the podcast listeners, NBA legend, on and off the court, a game changer, Spencer Haywood. Here is our interview with Spencer Haywood. Welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen, who is joining us right now?
Everybody knows how much I love my hometown. I'm always bossing up. I'm always saying, what up, doe? But I stand on the shoulder of giants. And one of them is on the program today. A legend, somebody I love dearly, somebody I idolize, a Hall of Famer. Spencer Haywood is gracious enough to join us today. Thank you very much, legend, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. You know, I usually see you guys around August with the Jalen Rose golf tournament for the school, you know? So it's good to see you in October.
And I appreciate that support. Yes, yeah. Indeed. We're definitely going to have it next year. But one of the things I wanted to bring you on the program to talk about, because you're going to be a best-selling author, is your new book. Congratulations.
The new book.
It's such an honor to talk to you about your book. Let me make sure I get the title right. The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles, Basketball, and the Making of an American Icon. Welcome to the program. Please tell us about the book.
Well, the book starts off in a little town called Silver City, Mississippi, from which I was born. And remember, Jalen, there is no silver and it ain't a city. So it's start off down there as a cotton picker, and I wanted to be the best cotton picker the state had ever seen. And lo and behold, I just kept picking and kept, you know, working. And it was indentured slavery because I couldn't leave, I couldn't do anything. So eventually, at the age of 14, what happened is the farmer look at you and say, this guy's getting big and strong, so we got to get him to plant him on his farm. So they trump up a charge on you. I went to jail for one night, and then and my mom said, we got to get out. You got to get out of here. We got to get you out. So they got me out in the dead of night, out of Belzoni, because I couldn't leave from Silver City with eyes all on me. And so when I got to Detroit, we had to play against your dad, Jimmy, the great Jimmy Walker, Dave Bing, Cassie Russell, Bill Buntins, all you Michigan guys, so you know these alumni. And so I played against those guys on an exhibition, and Will Robinson saw me, and I was 15 years old, and he said, hey, this is going to be my guy. And he said something, I mean, I don't know if it's proper these days, but he said to all of the coaches that were standing there, he said, I've been playing with mules. I got me a horse right now. And he adopted me. Will Robinson and James and Ida Bell adopted me. And we were looking to try to get to the Class A state champions, because the Class A state champions in Detroit is just like, it's like NC2A. It's like winning it all, but it's just the high school stuff. So we had a drought for 35 years on that. And so myself and Ralph Simpson and all of the great players from that Persian high school team, we went into Michigan State at the Big House, and we won it all. And that was my start to life. So the next step was, at the time, the 68 Olympics was coming about. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar decided to boycott. Elvin Hayes, Wesley Unseld decided to sign a contract to make themselves a pro. And so as a pro, you could not play in the Olympics. And so the Olympic Committee decided, well, we're going to let everybody try out this year. It's an open trial. And that's how I got to try out, because I was a freshman. They had never had a freshman. They never had a guy that was 18 years old and was turning 19 to try out for the Olympic team. And we got down to Mexico City. And then as we arrived in Mexico City, we went into this big room with everybody there. And we had heard that they had a meeting with Jackie Robinson, Martin Luther King, all of those people was there, not at the Olympics, but outside of it, talking about the boycott. What would we be doing? How would you do it, if you do anything? And most of them were saying, no, don't do anything. So we had a second meeting with Jesse Owen addressing all of the athletes, and Tommy Smith and John Carlos, you know, those guys. And John Carlos was like, you know, he was a speaker. He was like, yeah, man, what are we getting now? And so on. So he was, you know, New York style. And so here I am sitting in the corner like, man, 3 years ago I was picking cotton. I'm not saying. Jesse got a little bit, you know, turned off about us over there trying to make fun of him, because we were like, man, what is this old Uncle Tom dude has to say to us? And we young and we brash. And he looked at us and said, hey, young man, how would you felt if you had to run before Hitler? And we were like, all right, it in. I guess the game is on. And so we went and participated in the Olympics and did all of the things we were supposed to have done. And then when Tommy and John ran and for the Olympics, they finished first and third. And then they get up on the podium and they put on the black glove and say, yeah, just to take care of the people back home, we're going to salute them. And the next thing you know, they're running them out of the compound, put them on the plane, shipped them out. So we were just tore up as a team, Olympic team, not just basketball, but the boxing. So George Foreman, and he met with us, and he was like, man, I don't know, what am I going to do? We can't make a protest. So George said, well, when I knock this Russian out, and he hadn't did it yet, when I knock this Russian out, I'm going to get the flag and put it and walk around the ring with my flag in my hand. And he walked around with the flag in his hand. And then I got to our game. We were playing in the finals against Yugoslavia. And Howard Cosell caught me in the locker room before I was getting ready to go out on the floor and said, hey, you know, if you mess this up, the world is going to hate you. And not only that, but you won't be able to go back to Detroit. I was like, I can't go home. I got so nervous. Mr. Jacoby. I ran, and I made a layup, and I ran into the locker room, threw up, came back out, and ran back out on the floor, and we won the gold medal. And here I was standing on the podium, and I'm just thinking, and I'm my tears are flowing down my face, and I was like, dang, 3 years ago, I was picking cotton. I couldn't go into white bathrooms. I couldn't go into the movie. I couldn't go into the restaurant. I couldn't do anything. I was just a slave. And yet here I am now, this American hero with a passport, because I didn't have a passport before. So with the passport and everybody cheering my name, but dog it, I got to go back to Detroit. And so when we flew from just the idea that you could excel that fast in America was like incredible. And Will Robinson kept drilling it in my head. You see what I told you? And when we arrived in Detroit, there was Governor Romney, not Mitt Romney, but his daddy, and Mayor Kavanaugh, and a slew of all the people who came out to Metro to welcome home their champion. Wow. I just start crying and like, oh my God, I don't think I'm going to UCLA. I think I'm going to stay here. And so they lobbied me to stay in the Detroit area because we had just had the riots, Jay. And so they wanted to build up the city again. So I signed with the University of Detroit and not going to Michigan with Rudy. Rudy Tomjanovich and all of them. We had this deal that we were going to go back and be up in Michigan. So that was the first journey of that. And then, you know, of course, I had played there at the University of Detroit, where I was the Outstanding College Player of the Year. And then the draft came up with the NBA draft, and Kareem was the number one player pick. And I couldn't be picked because I was a sophomore. I just finished my sophomore year. And Hannah Storm's father, Mark Storm, says, we got something for you. We're going to take you over into the ABA, because they had reneged on the deal with Will Robinson. So I had no choice but to leave the university. And then when they took me over to the ABA, they said, look, if you can do 5 points, maybe 4 rebounds or something like that, this would have worked. So I did pretty good over there. I averaged 30 points and 19.5 rebounds. Was the MVP of the league, rookie of the year, and MVP of the All-Star game. So Denver says, well, wait a minute. We got this guy. We got a great player. We're going to show all of the basketball world what we got. So we're going to give him a contract for 1.9. I was like, oh, yes. And so I get this contract for 1.9. Then I get my attorney afterwards, after I signed it, because I thought, yeah, these people love me. So he looked at the contract and said, you know what you got here? You got a fraudulent contract. And how this contract read is that you get $100,000 for 4 years, and you get $1.5 deferred. And the deferred money will come about if you put, we were going to, the owners putting $10,000 into this dog-off plan on the Wall Street. And then I would draw my money from age 50 to age 70. And so, I know. And I also had to be employed. Jay, I had to be employed with Ringsby Truck Line, and from the time I picked up the ball until the ending of my life. And so that's when the NBA decided, well, Sam Schulman was the owner of the Seattle Supersonics, said, hey, listen, I think I'm going to go after this guy. And Jerry Colangelo said, go get him, because I got Connie Hawkins last year from the ABA, so let's raid it, let's tear it apart. And so they signed me, and when they signed me with Seattle Supersonics, all of a sudden, I get an injunction. The injunction read, well, you can't play for 10 games because we need to sort this out. You are an underclassman, and so you can't just walk out on this floor and play. So I waited and waited, my 10-game, you know, extent, and then I filed for an injunction to play. So all of my 10 games, they were like, ladies and gentlemen, we have an illegal player on the floor, number 24, and he must be he must be Sean, because, you know, he's breaking all of our rules. And they didn't even call me by my name. So I went through that for 10 days. Then they get another injunction. And this injunction would say, I'm in Cincinnati playing against the great Big O and everybody. And they said, ladies and gentlemen, we got an illegal player on the floor. And guess what? We got an injunction that should read, is reading, that he should be off the grounds in which this arena set up. So they put me out into the snow for until a whole game. I'm out there freezing because all I had my warm-up on and stuff, and I'm just freezing and crying like, what have I gotten myself into? And then I went back and got my injunction to play, and they called me all these names I heard in Mississippi long before. And then we finally got to the Supreme Court. And when we got to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall looked at everything and said, under the Sherman Antitrust Act, we cannot stop any person from making a living because we allow people to go to the Vietnam War at age 18. We can't stop him from making a living. And so thus, we're gonna rule in his favor 7-2. And I was like, yes! Great, but it wasn't great like great, because the NBA players had been told that if this guy win this case, all of you old heads are going to be pushed out on the back end, and all of the young heads are going to come in and just rule the NBA. And so the old heads was like, we can't support him. And so they finally did when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar came out on the floor and said, hey, the guy's here. I'm going to see if I can kill it. So he and I went at it in Milwaukee, and Sports Illustrated took a picture of it all. And that was my case. And it took 50 years for me to tell y'all this story. And sometimes you have to go through these kinds of things, you know, because once you are a pioneer, you have to set aside. And I said to myself, I didn't want to be like Curt Flood. Curt Flood went in for baseball, and we had Muhammad Ali for boxing, and I was there for basketball. But Curt went over to the islands and stayed away from America after his case, because he just couldn't take the pressure of all of this stress. And he finally came back to America, and the players did not know him, and they didn't know what he had did. And he just died, man. He just died. And I said, I'm gonna eat these vegetarian burgers. I'm gonna do everything. I'm gonna stick around until one of these days I'm gonna be on Jalen and Jacoby. And here I am. Yeah.
It's such an honor to have you here and to hear your story. And I wanna take you back to that 68 Olympics, because you mentioned sort of these meetings of athletes in, you know, ballroom type environments, and it draws a lot of parallels to today. While there's so much racial unrest going on in the country back then and today, bang, and in between,
identical,
what parallels do you see between the NBA players in the bubble right now and yourself and the other athletes in the 68 Olympics?
Well, in the 68 Olympics, we were sort of passive, and these guys today, they are not passive. They are standing up for what they believe in. They're fighting. And, you know, I must say this, because I feel that we are watching the best basketball that I have seen. And I've been around basketball since 1970 as a pro. So I am looking at how hard these guys are playing, how much dedication they have, how they are putting their lives on the line. They have no fans, they have no family. Man, being a player, you just look at them and say, wow, I wish I could be there in that environment, because you're like, it's just you and the team and the other teams, and it's just a special time. And they're putting on a show for America, where we are in a pandemic. We can't go out and say hello to nobody. We can't do this. And down in the bubble, they have to like keep everything on a lockdown. Man, I tell you, we're going to look back on this in a few years and say, gosh, those guys put it on the line. So my hat's off to them. And it's been awesome to see Chris Paul, who, as you know, Jalen, he was one of the guys when I put the first proposal to him that the retired player should have some kind of health insurance. And he, LeBron James, Steph Curry, and those guys came up with like $15 million worth of health insurance, increased on our pension. And I'm floored by all these young guys. I think they are the real deal. And I mean, you know, when you played, Jalen, back in those days, you guys had some stance, you did some stuff. In fact, you changed the game too in terms of the long shorts and what you did up in Michigan. But also, I must say this and say it on record. I thought you were going to get Chicago in that playoff series.
I did too. 1998.
Yeah, I was like, that sound like a Chuck D. 1998. Hey. He's got
my
a new
98
album.
Oldsmobile. Oh, that's a classic right there.
Classic, yeah.
How about this? How about this, legend? I want to ask you this. So, you talked about a 50-year window of, you used the term passive, because as black people in America, we were forced to be that. We had to cross the street when white people came. You talked about picking cotton and how our civil rights, while we still have a long way to go, clearly, we've come so very far. So in that 50-year window, really acknowledge for me, how does it make you feel that now you see the modern day athlete and they don't have that fear that you always had to have as somebody that started off picking cotton in the United States of America?
Yeah, well, that's a fear. And going through to the Supreme Court, because I had the NCAA was after me, the NBA was suing me, as well as the ABA sued me, and then the University of Detroit. So I was, you know, living in fear in Mississippi was one thing, but living in fear in Denver and Detroit and Seattle, that's a whole nother fear level. But the players today, I think they stand on our shoulders, because we brought the bar up a little higher and a little higher and much more higher. And so now they found their voice. And the people in the street, they found their voice. So it's an incredible time. We're gonna look back on these times and say, man, I lived in this time. Because, you know, the last time we had a pandemic was what, Mr. Jacoby?
1918.
Over
100 years ago. Yeah. Over 100 years ago. So, Mr. Haywood, you know, we're on the verge of LeBron James and the Lakers winning another championship. And what's going to bring up the old debate is who's the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan or LeBron? Michael Jordan or LeBron? Do you feel like players from your era and other players get overlooked in that greatest of all time debate?
Well, Kareem does. I think he should be in that debate because, you know,
preach.
But you know, how do you put a 7-footer in that debate? 7'2", and who did everything? He won high school. He won college. He won six NBA. I mean, he's the all-time scorer, all-time this. But you know, Michael Jordan came on the scene. He set the table in a different format, and it was a guard forward. I mean, he made a tremendous difference in the game, and that was my goal. So let me tell you one story about Jordan recently. So I'm in New York. We're like all hanging out in New York. This is like 2 years ago. So Jordan called me up. Come on, come on over to lunch. So I'm coming over to dinner and lunch with him, and he got a whole table full of people, you know. And he brought me over, and I'm thinking we're talking about something very serious. He bring up the Nike deal. You know, I signed that Nike contract.
Yes.
And my agent couldn't figure out how to get paid, and he turned my money in and said, no, you don't need any stock, so let's just take the money up front. So I lost about $1 billion on that run. And so Michael was just going all night long, just on that big, and he could have been a billionaire. And I was like, Mike, I was 22, man. I was trying to play the Mississippi thing on him. Man, I just came out of Mississippi. He said, I came from Wilmington, North Carolina. Negro, what are you talking about? So my affinity to the GOAT is Michael, because he set the table. But I tell you, that LeBron James, y'all, I think we're watching the greatest. I think we are watching him now. I don't know the argument.
I'm glad that you...
But I know our guys, Jalen, the game was involved into the evolution of the game, so we don't really count in this era because y'all have elevated the game so high, so much higher. That, you know, we were like dribbling back down, take a look. Man, the guys that 6'8" like I was, I mean, these guys are guards now. So it's a different game. So to answer your question, I'm going with LeBron as the GOAT.
Wow.
There you have it. Wow. There you have it. From one of the best to ever do it. From someone who changes the game on the court and off the court, Spencer Haywood. Congratulations on the book release. Congratulations on everything. Look forward to seeing you next year at the Jalen Rose Leadership Academy Golf Outing.
I love you, legend.
You're welcome to come back
you.
Anytime. You're welcome to come back anytime.
Always. Thank you.
I want to thank Spencer for his time and everything he's done for the game of basketball and for everyone around the world. And we'll be back tomorrow to break down game 4 of the NBA Finals. Why is that, Jalen Rose?
We're not done. We're not done. We're not done.